Chapter 10. The entire place shook like a major earth tremor had hit it. Up in the meeting room, only Blanquette's impressively loud shout prevented mass exodus.
Wait!
She couldn't get much more out because, on her feet like most of the others by then, she was working hard just to stay upright. But she'd halted those who'd been leaning or stepping toward the doors, and the rest were looking her way too.
Wait for what?
One of the more panicky-looking said, eyes dancing wildly.
You're not going to outrun it anyway, Arinetti said.
He was one of the few not pointed toward the door, though he'd risen too.
We need to see what's happening down there.
As though his words had triggered it, no sooner had he said that than the rumbling abruptly died off. For a moment, there was silence. Then,
what the hell is that?
The call from the Realm Interface Control Center had only ended because the tech who called had presumably been incapacitated, or even killed somehow, by the apparently deranged Dr. Celdric Gogman, an esteemed if temperamental genius and the overseeing mastermind behind the pod of sorts that had been designed to take a pair of intrepid and able-bodied survivalists into whatever lay inside that darkness at the center of that Northern Lights-like web of writhing energy. The line was still open, and what was reaching their ears from the unseen sound feed was like nothing any of them had ever heard.
That's exactly what it sounds like, Arinetti said. Hell!
Gogman had sealed off the control center to ensure his success. What lay beyond those heavy doors was anyone's guess, as the quite possible breach of the realm interface had knocked out the control center's handful of internal monitor feeds. And the phenomenon's own cavernous chamber was so filled with energy that delicate equipment couldn't survive there anyway. So they couldn't see a thing. But what they were hearing was the eeriest insanity imaginable. Howls, shrieks, screams, maniacal laughter. A veritable haunted house soundtrack. One of the panel's members, who hadn't spoken yet, asked in an anxious shout whether the tractor field was still intact.
If it wasn't, we'd be dead already, Arinetti said. Take it easy, Corothers.
The anxious scientist turned and glared at him.
You don't know what's going on in there, do you? He said. Nobody does, Wyler. For all you know, the tractor field will fail next.
Not the way it's designed, Blanquette said,
her look clearly saying she wanted control of the gathering back.
The containment itself holds the realm interface right where it is. It might waver a little, but as long as the external power keeps feeding the networks in the wall panels, it isn't going anywhere. And before you ask, the panels themselves aren't load-bearing, so they wouldn't have been affected by the seismic reaction from whatever happened in there.
Another rumble blew whatever she'd gained in the next moment. This one wasn't as strong, nor did it last as long, but that was hardly reassuring.
You sure about that? Arinetti said.
Of course. The tractor field monitors would notify us of any problems.
Another tremor came but a few seconds later.
We need to get out of here, Arinetti said, and we need to do it now.
You're insane, Arinetti, Blanquette said.
If we evacuate, there's no one to manage the field. It'll collapse.
Not going to be a problem.
Nobody had seen him do it. In the confusion of the first earth-shaking event, which had lasted at least 30 seconds, people had slid and fallen and staggered around everywhere, and he'd used that cover to work his way over to those little gadgets and grab them. Things had been so intense since then that even the man who was supposed to be watching them hadn't noticed until that moment, but it was too late. He was holding the shaver-shaped device in his hand and pointing it at his peers.
"What do you think you're doing, Wyler?"
Blanquette said.
No!
That was time. Arinetti looked over at her and saw her mouthing something back at him.
Backwards.
Arinetti glanced down at the device. The tape arrow was pointing at his intended targets. He glanced up and saw time mouth the same word again. He figured it out. Rotating the device and pointing the arrow toward himself, he pushed down on both sides. Everyone dropped. Arinetti shoved the device into his pocket, went over, and quickly scooped Time up off the floor. Throwing her over his shoulder, he headed back to the doors and was relieved when they opened in front of him.
"I've got her," he said to the surprised-looking security guards. "Taking her back to her cell. She had a trick up her sleeve, but she's out good. Get someone to tend to everyone else. I think they're just knocked out too."
He hustled off with time bouncing along on his shoulder before the room defenders could even ask him what happened. Luckily for him, his clearance and recognisable visage worked to let him get away. About 10 minutes later, Zapped Brain Trust was coming to, attended to by Asher Klager's security crew. She was the top security chief, after all, regardless of how she'd played her part to time as being that of a drone. They had some seriously shocking news to drop on those who were supposedly in charge of the place, and it shook them out of their dazes quickly. A second control center takeover had gone down, and this too had been pulled off by a lone person. The Tractor Field Operations Center had plenty of communications, even visual, so Blanquette linked the room's wall-sized monitor to one of those live feeds.
"What the hell are you doing, Arinetti?" Blanquette said,
and the Operation Center room's occupants watched him slowly rotate until he spotted the live camera.
"What I have to," he said. "Get everyone out now."
"You're insane,"
one of the panel's female members said.
"Just a realist," he said. "You've got 3 minutes."
Before anyone had time to respond, another quake, the sixth, actually, hit.
"A funny thing about doors, folks," he said, looking up at the screen. "They work both ways."
He grinned oddly and shook his head. He looked tired and haggard, like he'd been in a fight after crawling a mile through a dirty pipe.
"Gogman took the pod up into the event," he said. "The moment he breached the plasma haze barrier, it came down. And before you say it, no, I don't know why you and I are still here to talk about it. The event itself is in there with nothing shielding it, and just the tractor field keeping it there. And like I said, doors work both ways. Gogman's gone. He and the pod were already through the RI when I got here. And well, ladies and gentlemen, the door is open."
He glanced off to his left, then back over that shoulder, before eyeing the camera again.
"Switch over to Cam 4. Come on."
He turned and moved from where he'd been leaning on the corner of a desk, moving with a faint limp over to the middle of the tractor field control center, where a rectangular mosaic of viewing screens filled the wall at his back, as Blanquette switched to the other camera.
"I know what's in there," Arinetti said. "You've seen it," Blanquette said. "Of course not. It's impossible. But I know what it is. And if I'm right, this is the only option we have." "What option?" "Evacuate everything now," Arinetti said. "The sub-trains are fast enough and have the room. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know what'll happen if I don't do this."
"Do what?"
another of the panel members said. Arinetti leaned over the console that he'd stopped beside and pushed a couple of buttons. The screen grid behind him came to life, displaying all kinds of vital signs for the systems they monitored. Power, frequency, component status and others.
"I pulled a pretty good bluff while you were all out, and I think the lowest levels are evacuated," he said. "Trick is, I don't know how fast this is going to happen, or how wide it's going to spread. So you all need to be gone."
"You can't do that," Blanquette said.
"You can make another realm interface," Arinetti said. "This one's had it. And if we're going to reach into Miracle Land to save our butts, if there's some way we can avoid what Einstein said would happen, this is it. So saddle up and you might live to make another RI.
For a few long, very tense seconds, the pair just stared at each other while everyone else looked on.
"What about you?"
"Somebody's got to push the button," Arinetti said. "On the plus side, looks like I may just get to see what's on the other side either way."
"You can't!"
"I dropped a few people getting all this done, and they won't get away. So whatever I'm doing to myself, I'm doing to them too." That pretty much makes me a murderer, and what I'm doing is setting an acceptable loss limit. You know, like our sponsors love to do. But, sorry, Skylar, Arinetti said. This is how it's gotta be. Go, now, and do it right next time.
He lifted the revolver he'd taken from a guard, took aim and hit the camera with a second shot. With a few more bullets, he took out the others as quickly as Blanquette could switch them on.
What do we do?
The man who'd lost track of Wilson Mandine's acquired gadgets said. Blanquette let a tear streak down one cheek and spoke through gritted teeth.
We evacuate, she said.
About half an hour later, very close to the spot where Time and Dredge had been standing at the moment of their abduction, the moonlit desert commenced to cracking and splitting into fragments. At first, only a small patch did this, its cracks initially quite faint, yet continuously widening. But in the next few seconds, the fractures worked their way out like an expanding spiderweb and quickly stretched the virtually circular cracking zone to a width of over 100 feet. Beneath this strange destruction, the utterly black sphere that was the unsheathed realm interface was effectively doing a reverse meltdown. With the tractor field shut down, it had been and still was rising up toward the surface, absorbing everything in its path. An insatiable devourer of matter driven by its own nature away from Earth's gravitational centre in a manner both similar to and yet quite different from the concept of like charges repelling. That strange physical reality, in fact, had been incorporated into the top and sides design of the tractor field. Even with nothing containing it at the bottom of the chamber, the RI still couldn't actually go anywhere because it was being constantly pushed up against the field's ceiling. That is, until Arinetti had shut down the field. Losing more and more support as the realm interface phenomenon neared the decaying land, the centre of the affected area was sinking and so creating a loose-sided pit as the overall cracking crawled out even wider. The pit grew deeper and wider as a soft rumbling rose around the deserted landscape. At Blanquette's departing order, drones hovered over the area, a small flock of them stationed here and there to witness the melt-up as it reached the surface. At last the land could support itself no longer, and as it crumbled and collapsed, it was absorbed into the RI and vanished. Like a cloaked god of the underworld, the sphere rose up into the clear Nevada night sky, leaving behind a nearly perfectly eaten tunnel 7 miles deep. Morning Glory's surviving leaders watched the phenomenon float up and out into space, and there were many gasps and even a few more frightened sounds as the drone cameras zoomed in on the oddly fuzzy and uneven periphery of the unshielded event.
What in the name of all that's holy? Someone said.
Others were expressing their shock with hushed whispers that oozed both awe and dread. In their midst, grimly assessing the horrifying things that were flying in and out of the RI like disturbed hornets, with some of them simply flying off and away from it as it continued to rise, Dr. Blanquette studied the nightmarish winged atrocities as well.
"You're asking the wrong side," she said grimly.
"What do we do?"
Dr. Carruthers said.
"Hope it keeps going."
Several 100 miles away, two figures triggered the night watchman security floodlights, alerting Wilson Mandine to intruders. A bedside monitor revealed them to be familiar ones, but even though the IR cameras clearly identified them, she had a hard time believing what she was seeing. A minute and change later, the front door of the solarium opened, and there she stood, shotgun in hand. The surprised visitors waved and kept coming on, but stopped when they saw her take a little less relaxed stance with the gun.
"Hey, it's us, Will," Dredge said.
"Yeah, I see that," Will said. "Sure looks like both of you, but unannounced guests in the middle of the night never get the benefit of the doubt. Paranoid, remember?"
She demanded they name a couple of her pets. They managed to name 5, but 4 of those came from Time.
"Question the second," Will said, still holding the gun like she might just use it. "Who are my 3 favourite writers?"
She'd actually named them on their original visit, but put on the spot her second-time visitors could only get 2 of 3, with Dredge remembering Mark Twain and Time recalling Hunter S. Thompson.
Ah, what the hell? Close enough, Will said. The other one's Terence McKenna. All right, the final round question. What happened? How did you get back here when the road sensor didn't pick up a vehicle? And is the planet still going to blow up? And please feel free to answer the last one first.
It never was, Time said, hollering back across the perhaps 40-foot gap that separated them. With Dredge moving first, he and Time resumed their advance and watched Will, who stood unflinching and watching them approach.
Yeah,
Dredge said when they were close enough to the light coming through the open solarium door that they could see her face and vice versa.
Whole different apocalypse than we were figuring. And we're not sure, but it may be averted. So far so good, I guess. As long as this isn't a dream.
As for how we got here, Time said, you should know.
What?
Will took a hand away from the shotgun and lowered it to her side, falling into a somewhat more at-ease stance as Time's implication became clear.
That little fan trinket, you mean it actually worked?
Time held out her hand. The formerly shiny gadget was scorched black here and there. Will saw as she looked down at the device where it rested in Time's palm.
I guess it was a one-shot deal, Dredge said. This guy showed up at my cell with her over his shoulder. Dropped her off. Told me to get her the hell out of there while he created what he said was going to be a huge diversion. He left the door unlocked too. But as it turned out, we didn't need it.
Are you sure that gadget came from a fan? Time said. I wasn't sure who sent it, Will said. Or what it did. I just got that little note with it that I told you about. The one that called it a get-out-of-jail-free card. I wasn't even sure how to use it, much less why.
Reassuring,
Dredge said dryly.
Well, it worked, didn't it? Where would you be if it hadn't somehow brought you here? Also, why did it bring you here? Do you even know that?
I think that one was on me, Dredge said. The shiny end could be pushed in, so I was desperate enough to do it. Besides, I figured I'd never find our way out of there otherwise.
You pushed the button and what? Wished to be here?
Pretty much. That was all I had. Worked like a teleporter. I just pictured your place and here we are.
Mandine grinned broadly.
Oh, sweet.
Well, it was here or the car we left in that ghost town, so take it for what it's worth.
For a moment, there was silence and smiles all around. They went inside. One of Will's dogs, Troy, was patrolling the perimeter of the solarium table and chairs in case anything edible might happen to fall from above. Her cat Phyllis was perched on a shelf in a rare open spot between potted plants, half dozing with eyes not quite closed.
So what happens now? Will said. We just keep living with the mundane daily dread of the collapse of something, or impact from something, or catching something. Or do you think there's still an imminent peril?
Probably, Dredge said. I doubt we'll ever know what's gone down at Morning Glory.
Other than that crazy scientist trying to make what Albert warned us about come true, Time said. I just hope Wyler, Dr. Arenetti, stopped whatever followed. Again, world's still here so far, Will said. And if this crisis you witnessed break out isn't still going on, then it's been resolved. Which is hopefully the case, and if so, I'm thankful and relieved that I'm going to break with my own tradition and say that I don't even care if no evidence of any of it ever comes to light at all.
Wishful thinking, of course, was simply that. No, there had been no civilian witnesses to the Realm Interface's events melt up as it rose, spitting out airborne horrors, and eventually disappeared into the depths of space. But the all-consuming phenomenon had given the Nevada desert a very discernible new feature. Albeit thankfully remote, the tube-like cylindrical hole opened up by the gravity-repelling departure was nearly 200 feet across and 7 miles deep by the end, and thus effectively exposed Morning Glory's incredible facility right down the centre of its massive core from top to bottom. So that was a bit of an embarrassment, of course, to all involved. and there wasn't much they could do about it because new tenants had already moved into the evacuated facility. Whatever they were utterly alien to this world. Revolting, bizarre bodies as big as those of bears that sported membranous wings that were huge, thick, and leathery enough to carry them aloft with relative ease. The things that had come through the event before it reached space had numbered in the hundreds, with most of them having decided to stay put in their freshly acquired lair. But not all of them stayed there. A few went off to explore their new world, streaking out over the night skies of Nevada. They would remain a secret to the world at large, known only by the military's dark ops programs and the displaced Morning Glory personnel, but only for a couple of weeks. On a cloudy Saturday morning in mid-May, several dozen very convincing videos charged up the paranormal world, and even beyond, as they all provided various angles of an indisputably flying creature as it swooped down on a crowded Manhattan street, strafing the crowd, and proceeded to grab up and fly off with a presumably random pedestrian. But, despite absurd odds, it seemed, Arinetti, Dredge, Time, and Einstein had prevented that lone monster and a cluster of others nesting in the Morning Glory facility from being part of a world-conquering army of them. At least for the moment. The End.